The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. Continued. Disc 7.
Could take all that gear instead of smashing and let you go on best you can.
That would be almost as bad. You must understand, Gaspardine, that when an experiment is interrupted...
I know. Easier than moving anything, and maybe missing some, is to take you all to complex and quarter you there. We have what used to be Dragoon Barracks, but that, too, would ruin experiments. Besides, where are you from, Doctor?
Princeton, New Jersey.
So, you've been here 5 months and no doubt exercising and wearing weights. Doctor, if we did that, you might never see Princeton again. If we move you, we'll keep you locked up. You'll get soft. If emergency goes on very long, you'll be a loony, like it or not, and all your brainy help with you.
A cocky chum stepped forward, one who had been sent for twice.
You can't do this. It's against the law.
What law, Gaspardine? Some law back in your hometown? I turned.
Finn, show him law.
Finn stepped forward and placed the emission bell of gun at man's belly button. Thumb started to press down. Safety switched, I could see. I said, "Don't kill him, Finn." Then went on, "I will eliminate this man if that's what it takes to convince you. So watch each other. One more offense will kill all your chances of seeing home again, as well as ruining researches. Doctor, I warn you to find ways to keep check on your staff."
I turned to Loonies.
"Tovarishi, keep them honest. Work up on guard system. Don't take nonsense. Every earthworm is on probation. If you have to eliminate some, don't hesitate." I turned to the director.
"Doctor, any loony can go anywhere, anytime, even your bedroom. Your assistants are now your bosses, so far as security is concerned. If a loony decides to follow you, or anybody, into a WC, don't argue. He might be jumpy."
I turned to loonies.
"Security first. You each work for some earthworm. Watch him. Split it among you, and don't miss anything. Watch him so close they can't build mousetrap, much less transmitter. If interferes with work for them, don't worry. Wages will go on."
Kutsi grins. Lab assistant was best job a loony could find those days, but they worked under earthworms who looked down on us, even ones who pretended and were oh so gracious. I let it go at that. When I had been phoned, I had intended to eliminate offenders, but Prof and Mike set me straight. Plan did not permit violence against Terrans that could be avoided. We set up EARS, wide-band sensitive receivers, around lab area, since even most directorial rigs spill a little in neighborhood. And Mike listened on all phones in area. After that, we chewed nails and hoped. Presently we relaxed, as news up from Earthside showed nothing. They seemed to accept censored transmissions, without suspicion, and private and commercial traffic and authorities' transmissions all seemed routine. Meanwhile, we worked, trying in days what should take months. We received one break in timing. No passenger ship was on Luna, and none was due until 7 July. We could have copped, suckered a ship's officer to dine with Warden or something, then mounted guard on its senders or dismantled them. Could not have lifted without our help. In those days, one drain on ice was providing water for reaction mass. Was not much drain compared with grain shipments. One man ship a month was heavy traffic then, while grain lifted every day. What it did mean was that an incoming ship was not an insuperable hazard. Nevertheless, was lucky break. We were trying so hard to make everything look normal until we could defend ourselves. Grain shipments went on as before. One was catapulted almost as Finn's men were breaking into Warden's residence. And next went out on time. And all others. Neither oversight nor faking for interim, Prof knew what he was doing. Grain shipments were a big operation for a little country like Luna, and couldn't be changed in one semilunar. bread and beer of too many people was involved. If our committee had ordered embargo and quit buying grain, we would have been chucked out, and a new committee with other ideas would have taken over. Prof said that an educational period was necessary. Meanwhile, grain barges catapulted as usual. Lunohoko kept books and issued receipts, using civil service personnel. Dispatches went out in warden's name, and Mike talked to Authority Earthside, using warden's voice. Deputy Administrator proved reasonable, once he understood it upped his life expectancy. Chief Engineer stayed on job, too. McIntyre was a real loony, given chance, rather than Fink by nature. Other department heads and minor stooges were no problem. Life went on as before, and we were too busy to unwind Authority system and put useful parts up for sale. Over a dozen people turned up claiming to be Simon Jester. Simon wrote a rude verse disclaiming them, and had picture on front page of Lunatic, Pravda, and Gong. Wyle let herself go blonde, and made trip to see Greg at new catapult site. Then a longer trip, 10 days, to old home in Hong Kong Luna, taking Anna, who wanted to see it. Lyle needed a vacation, and Prof urged her to take it, pointing out that she was in touch by phone and that closer party contact was needed in Hong Kong. I took over her still Yagi with Slim and Hazel as my lieutenants. Bright, sharp kids I could trust. Slim was awed to discover that I was Comrade Bork and saw Adam Selene every day. His party name started with G. Many a good team for other reasons, too. Hazel suddenly started showing cushiony curves, and not all from Mimi's superb table. She had reached that point in her orbit. Slim was ready to change her name to Stone any time she was willing to opt. In meantime, he was anxious to do party work he could share with our fierce little redhead. Not everybody was willing. Many comrades turned out to be talk-talk soldiers. Still more thought war was over once we had eliminated peace goons and captured Warden. Others were indignant to learn how far down they were in party structure. They wanted to elect a new structure, themselves at top. Adam received endless calls proposing this or something like it. Would listen, agree, assure them that their services must not be wasted by waiting for election, and refer them to Prof or me. Can't recall any of these ambitious people who amounted to anything when I tried to put them to work. Was endless work, and nobody wanted to do it. Well, a few. Some best volunteers were people party never located. But in general, loonies in and out of party had no interest in patriotic work, unless well paid. A chum who claimed to be a party member was not. Spragney and Raffles, where we set up headquarters, and wanted me to contract for 50,000 buttons to be worn by pre-coup veterans of revolution. A small profit for him, I estimate 400% markup. Easy dollars for me. A fine thing for everybody. When I brushed him off, he threatened to denounce me to Adam Selene. A very good friend of mine, I'll have you know. For sabotage. That was help we got. What we needed was something else. Needed steel at New Catapult, and plenty. Prof asked if really necessary to put steel around rock missiles. I had to point out that an induction field won't grab bare rock. We needed to relocate Mike's ballistic radars at old site and install Doppler radar at new site. Both jobs because we could expect attacks from space at old site. We called for volunteers, got only two who could be used. I needed several hundred mechanics who did not mind hard work in pea suits. So, we hired, paid what we had to. Lunohoko went into Hak, to Bank of Hong Kong Luna. Was no time to steal that much, and most funds had to be transferred earthside to Stu. A dinkum comrade, Fu Moses Morris, co-signed much paper to keep us going, and wound up broke and started over with a little tailoring shop in Kongville. That was later. Authority script dropped from 3-1 to 17-1 after coup, and civil service people screamed, as Mike was still paying in authority checks. We said they could stay on or resign. Then those we needed, we rehired with Hong Kong dollars, but created a large group not on our side from then on. They longed for good old days and were ready to stab new regime. Grain farmers and brokers were unhappy because payment at Catapult Head continued to be authority scrip at same old fixed prices. "We won't take it," they cried. A Luna Hoko man would shrug and tell them they didn't have to, but this grain still went to authority Earthside, and did. An authority scrip was all they would get. So, take check, or load your grain back in Rolligan, and get it out of here. Most took it. All grumbled, and some threatened to get out of grain and start growing vegetables or fibers or something that brought Hong Kong dollars. And Prof smiled. We needed every drill man in Luna, especially ice miners who owned heavy-duty laser drills, as soldiers. We needed them so badly that, despite being shy one wing and rusty, I considered joining up, even though it takes muscles to wrestle a big drill, and prosthetic just isn't muscle. Prof told me not to be a fool. Dodge we had in mind would not work well Earthside. A laser beam carrying heavy power works best in vacuum, but there it works just dandy for whatever range its collimation is good for. These big drills, which had carved through rock seeking pockets of ice, were now being mounted as artillery to repel space attacks. Both ships and missiles have electronic nervous systems, and does electronic gear no good to blast it with upteen joules placed in a tight beam. If target is pressured, as manned ships are and most missiles, all it takes is to burn a hole, depressure it. If not pressured, a heavy laser beam can still kill it, burn eyes, louse guidance, spoil anything depending on electronics, as most everything does. An H-bomb with circuitry ruined is not a bomb. It's just big tub of lithium deuteride that can't do anything but crash. A ship with eyes gone is a derelict, not a warship. Sounds easy. Is not. Those laser drills were never meant for targets 1,000 kilometers away, or even one, and was no quick way to rig their cradles for accuracy. Gunner had to have guts to hold fire until last few seconds, on a target headed at him maybe 2 kilometers per second. But was best we had. So, we organized 1st and 2nd Volunteer Defense Gunners of Free Luna. 2 regiments, so that 1st could snub lowly 2nd, and 2nd could be jealous of 1st. 1st got older men, 2nd got young and eager. Having called them volunteers, we hired in Hong Kong dollars, and was no accident that ice was paid for in controlled market in waste paper authority scrip. On top of all, we were talking up a war scare.
Adam Celine talked over video, reminding that authority was certain to try to regain its tyranny, and we had only days to prepare. Papers quoted him and published stories of their own. We had made special effort to recruit newsmen before coup. People were urged to keep peace suits always near and to test pressure alarms in homes. A volunteer civil defense corps was organized in each warren. What with moonquakes always with us, each warren's pressure co-op always had sealing crews ready at any hour. Even with silicone stay-soft and fiberglass, any warren leaks. In Davis Tunnel, our boys did maintenance on seal every day. But now we recruited hundreds of emergency sealing crews, mostly still Yagi, drilled them with fake emergencies, had them stay in pea suits with helmets open when on duty. They did beautifully. But idiots made fun of them. Play soldiers. Adam's Little Apples. Other names. A team was going through a drill, showing they could throw a temporary lock around one that had been damaged, and one of these pinheads stood by and rode them loudly. Civil defense team went ahead, completed temporary lock, tested it with helmets closed. It held. Came out, grabbed this joker, took him through the temporary lock, and out into zero pressure. Dumped him. Belittlers kept opinions to themselves after that. Prof thought we ought to send out a gentle warning not to eliminate so peremptorily. I opposed it and got my way. could see no better way to improve breed. Certain types of loudmouthism should be a capital offense among decent people. But our biggest headaches were self-anointed statesmen. Did I say that loonies are non-political? They are, when it comes to doing anything. But doubt if was ever a time two loonies over a liter of beer did not swap loud opinions about how things ought to be run. As mentioned, these self-appointed political scientists tried to grab Adam Cillian's ear. But Prof had a place for them. Each was invited to take part in Ad Hoc Congress for Organization of Free Luna, which met in Community Hall in Luna City, then resolved to stay in session until work was done, a week in L City, a week in Novalin, then Hong Kong, and start over. All sessions were in video. Prof presided over first, and Adam Celine addressed them by video and encouraged them to do a thorough job. History is watching you. I listened to some sessions, then cornered Prof and asked what in Bog's name was he up to. Thought you didn't want any government. Have you heard those nuts since you turned them loose? He smiled, most dimply smile.
What's troubling you, Manuel?
Many things were troubling me.
With me breaking heart trying to round up heavy drills and men who could treat them as guns, these idlers had spent an entire afternoon discussing immigration. Some wanted to stop it entirely. Some wanted to tax it, high enough to finance government, when 99 out of 100 loonies had to be dragged to the rock. Some wanted to make it selective by ethnic ratios. Wondered how they would count me. Some wanted to limit it to females until we were 50-50. That had produced a Scandinavian shout, "Ja, Kaber! Tell 'em send us hoors, thousands and thousands of hoors. I marry 'em, I betcha."
Was most sensible remark all afternoon.
Another time they argued, time. Sure, Greenwich time bears no relation to lunar, but why should it when we live underground? Show me a loony who can sleep 2 weeks and work 2 weeks. Lunars don't fit our metabolism. What was urged was to make a lunar exactly equal to 28 days instead of 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, 2.78 seconds, and do this by making days longer, and hours, minutes, and seconds, thus making each semilunar exactly 2 weeks. Sure. Lunar is necessary for many purposes. Controls when we go up on surface, why we go, and how long we stay. But aside from throwing us out of gear with our only neighbor, had that wordy vacuum skull thought what this would do to every critical figure in science and engineering? As an electronics man, I shuddered. Throw away every book, table, instrument, and start over? I know that some of my ancestors did that in switching from old English units to MKS, but they did it to make things easier. 14 inches to a foot, and some odd number of feet to a mile? Ounces and pounds? Ugh, Bog. Made sense to change that. But why go out of your way to create confusion? Somebody wanted a committee to determine exactly what loony language is. Then fine everybody who talked Earthside English or other language. Huh, my people. I read tax proposals in Lunatic. 4 sorts of single taxers. A cubic tax that would penalize a man if he extended tunnels, a head tax, everybody pay same, income tax, like to see anyone figure income of Davis family or try to get information out of mum, and an air tax, which was not fees we paid then, but something else. Hadn't realized Free Luna was going to have taxes. Hadn't had any before and got along. You paid for what you got. Tonstoffel. How else? Another time some pompous chum proposed that bad breath and body odors be made an elimination offense. Could almost sympathize, having been stuck on occasion in a capsule with such stinks. But doesn't happen often, and tends to be self-correcting. Chronic offenders, or unfortunates who can't correct, aren't likely to reproduce, seeing how choosy women are.
One female, most were men, but women made up for it in silliness, had a long list she wanted made permanent laws about private matters. No more plural marriage of any sort. No divorces. No fornication. I had to look that one up. No drinks stronger than 4% beer. Church services only on Saturdays, and all else to stop that day. Air and temperature and pressure engineering, lady? Phones and capsules? A long list of drugs to be prohibited, and a shorter list dispensed only by licensed physicians. What is a licensed physician? Healer I go to has a sign reading practical doctor. Makes book on side, which is why I go to him. Look, lady, aren't any medical schools in Luna. She even wanted to make gambling illegal. If a loony couldn't roll double or nothing, he would go to a shop that would, even if dice were loaded. Thing that got me was not her list of things she hated, since she was obviously crazy as a cyborg, but fact that always somebody agreed with her prohibitions. Must be a yearning deep in human heart to stop other people from doing as they please. Rules, laws, always for other fellow. A murky part of us, something we had before we came down out of trees, and failed to shuck when we stood up. Because not one of those people said, "Please pass this so I won't be able to do something I know I should stop." Нет, товарищи. Was always something they hated to see neighbors doing. Stop them for their own good. Not because speaker claimed to be harmed by it. Listening to that session, I was almost sorry we got rid of Mort the Wart. He stayed holed up with his women and didn't tell us how to run private lives. But Prof didn't get excited. He went on smiling. Manuel, do you really think that mob of retarded children can pass any laws? You told them to. Urged them to. My dear Manuel, I was simply putting all my nuts in one basket. I know those nuts. I've listened to them for years. I was very careful in selecting their committees. They all have built-in confusion. They will quarrel. The chairman I forced on them while letting them elect him is a ditherer who could not unravel a piece of string. Thinks every subject needs more study. I almost needn't have bothered. More than six people cannot agree on anything. Three is better, and one is perfect for a job that one can do. This is why parliamentary bodies all through history, when they accomplished anything, owed it to a few strong men who dominated the rest. Never fear, son. This ad hoc Congress will do nothing. Or if they pass something through sheer fatigue, it will be so loaded with contradictions that it will have to be thrown out. In the meantime, they are out of our hair. Besides, there is something we need them for. Later. I thought you said they could do nothing. They won't do this. One man will ride it, a dead man. And late at night, when they are very tired, they'll pass it by acclamation.
Who's this dead man? You don't mean Mike?
No, no. Mike is far more alive than those yammerheads. The dead man is Thomas Jefferson, first of the rational anarchists, my boy, and one who almost managed to slip over his non-system through the most beautiful rhetoric ever written. But they caught him at it, which I hope to avoid. I cannot improve on his phrasing. I shall merely adapt it to Luna and the 21st century. Heard of him. Freed slaves, niet? One might say he tried, but failed. Never mind. How are the defenses progressing? I don't see how we can keep up the pretense past the arrival date of this next ship.
Can't be ready, then.
Mike says we must be.
We weren't, but ship never arrived.
Those scientists outsmarted me and loonies I had told to watch them. Was a rig at focal point of biggest reflector, and loony assistants believed double talk about astronomical purpose, a new wrinkle in radio telescopes. I suppose it was. Was ultra-microwave, and stuff was bounced at reflector by a waveguide, and thus left scoped lined up nicely by mirror, remarkably like early radar. And metal lattice work and foil heat shield of barrel stopped stray radiation, thus ears I had staked out heard nothing. They put message across, their version, and in detail. First we heard was demand from authority to warden to deny this hoax. Find hoaxer. Put stop to it. So, instead, we gave them a declaration of independence. In Congress assembled, July 4th, 2076. Was beautiful. XV. Signing of Declaration of Independence went as Proof said it would. He sprang it on them at the end of a long day, announced a special session after dinner at which Adam Selene would speak. Adam read aloud, discussing each sentence, then read it without stopping, making music of sonorous phrases. People wept. Wyo, seated by me, was one, and I felt like it, even though had read it earlier. Then Adam looked at them and said, "The future is waiting. Mark well what you do." And turned meeting over to Prof, rather than usual chairman. Was 2200, and fight began. Sure, they were in favor of it. News all day had been jammed with what bad boys we were, how we were to be punished, taught a lesson, so forth. Not necessary to spice it up. Stuff from Earthside was nasty. Mike merely left out, on the other hand, opinions. If ever was a day when Luna felt unified, it was probably 2nd of July, 2076. So, they were going to pass it. Proof knew that, before he offered it. But not as written.
"Honorable Chairman, in second paragraph, that word unalienable is no such word, should be inalienable. And anyhow, wouldn't it be more dignified to say sacred rights rather than inalienable rights? I'd like to hear discussion on this."
That chum was almost sensible, merely a literary critic, which is harmless, like dead yeast left in beer. But, well, take that woman who hated everything. She was there with List. Read it aloud and moved to have it incorporated into declaration.
"So that the peoples of Terra will know that we are civilized and fit to take our places in the councils of mankind."
Prof not only let her get away with it, he encouraged her, letting her talk when other people wanted to. Then blandly put her proposal to a vote, when hadn't even been seconded. Congress operated by rules they had wrangled over for days. Prof was familiar with rules, but followed them only as suited him. She was voted down in a shout, and left. Then somebody stood up and said, "Of course that long list didn't belong in declaration, but shouldn't we have general principles? Maybe a statement that Luna, free state, guaranteed freedom, equality, and security to all? Nothing elaborate. Just those fundamental principles that everybody knew was proper purpose of government." "True enough. And let's pass it. But must read freedom, equality, peace, and security. Right, comrade?" They wrangled over whether freedom included free air, or was that part of security. Why not be on safe side and list free air by name? Move to amend to make it free air and water, because you didn't have freedom or security unless you had both air and water. Air, water, and food? Air, water, food, and cubic. Air, water, food, cubic, and heat. No, make heat read power, and you had it all covered. Everything. Cobber, have you lost your mind? That's far from everything, and what you left out is an affront to all womankind. Step outside and say that. Let me finish. We've got to tell them right from deal that we will permit no more ships to land unless they carry at least as many women as men."
"At least," I said. "And I, for one, won't shop it unless it sets immigration issues straight."
Prof never lost dimples. Began to see why Prof had slept all day and was not wearing weights. Me? I was tired. Having spent all day in Pisut out beyond Catapult Head, cutting in last of relocated ballistic radars. And everybody was tired. By midnight, crowd began to thin, convinced that nothing would be accomplished that night, and bored by any yammer not their own. Was later than midnight when someone asked why this declaration was dated 4th when today was 2nd. Prof said mildly that it was July 3rd now, and it seemed unlikely that our declaration could be announced earlier than 4th, and that July 4th carried historical symbolism that might help. Several people walked out at the announcement that probably nothing would be settled until 4th of July. But I began to notice something. Hall was filling as fast as was emptying. Finn Nielsen slid into a seat that had just been vacated. Comrade Clayton from Hong Kong showed up, pressed my shoulder, smiled at Wyo, found a seat. My youngest lieutenants, Slim and Hazel, I spotted down front, and was thinking, I must alibi Hazel by telling Mom I had kept her out on party business. When was amused to see Mom herself next to them. And Sidrus, and Greg, who was supposed to be at New Catapult. Looked around and picked out a dozen more. Night editor of Lunaya Pravda. General manager of Luno Hoko. Others, and each one a working comrade. Began to see that Prof had stacked deck. That Congress never had a fixed membership. These dinkum comrades had as much right to show up as those who had been talking a month. Now they sat and voted down amendments. About 300, when I was wondering how much more I could take, someone brought a note to Prof. He read it, banged the gavel, and said, Adam Selene begs your indulgence. Do I hear unanimous consent? So, screen back of Rostrum lighted up again, and Adam told them that he had been following debate and was warmed by many thoughtful and constructive criticisms. But could he make a suggestion? Why not admit that any piece of writing was imperfect? If this declaration was, in general, what they wanted, why not postpone perfection for another day and pass this as it stands? Honorable Chairman, I so move. They passed it with a yell. Prof said, Do I hear objection? And waited, with gavel raised. A man who had been talking when Adam had asked to be heard said, Well, I still say that's a dangling participle, but okay, leave it in. Prof banged gavel. So ordered. Then we filed up and put our chops on a big scroll that had been sent over from Adam's office, and I noticed Adam's chop on it. I signed right under Hazel. Child now could write, although still short on book learning. Her chop was shaky, but she wrote it large and proud. Comrade Clayton signed his party name, real name in letters, and Japanese chop. Three little pictures, one above other. Two comrades chopped with X's, and had them witnessed. All party leaders were there that night, morning, all chopped it, and not more than a dozen yammerers stuck. But those who did put their chops down for history to read, and thereby committed their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honors. While Q was moving slowly past and people were talking, Prof banged for attention. I asked for volunteers for a dangerous mission. This declaration will go on the news channels, but must be presented in person to the Federated Nations on Terra. That put stop to noise. Prof was looking at me. I swallowed and said, I volunteer. Wyo echoed, So do I. And little Hazel Mead said, Me too. In moments were a dozen. From Finn Nielsen to Gospodin dangling participle, turned out to be good cobbler aside from his fetish. Prof took names, murmured something about getting in touch as transportation became available. I got Prof aside and said, Look, Prof, you too tired to track? You know ship for 7th was cancelled. Now they're talking about slapping embargo on us. Next ship they lift for Luna will be a warship. How you planning to travel, as prisoner? Oh, we won't use their ships. So? Going to build one? Any idea how long that takes? If could build one at all, which I doubt. Manuel, Mike says it's necessary, and has it all worked out. I did know Mike said it was necessary. He had rerun problems soon as we learned that bright laddies at Richardson had snuck one home. He now gave us only one chance in 53, with imperative need for Prof to go Earthside. But I'm not one to worry about impossibilities. I had spent day working to make that one chance in 53 turn up. Mike will provide the ship, Prof went on. He has completed its design, and it is being worked on.
He has?
It is? Since when is Mike engineer?
Isn't he? Asked Prof.
I started to answer. Shut up. Mike had no degrees, simply knew more engineering than any man alive. Or about Shakespeare's plays, or riddles, or history. Name it.
Tell me more.
Manuel will go to Terra as a load of grain.
What?
Who's we?
You and myself.
The other volunteers are merely decorative.
I said, look, Prof, I've stuck. Worked hard when whole thing seemed silly. Worn these weights, got them on now, on chance I might have to go to that dreadful place. But contracted to go in the ship, with at least a cyborg pilot to help me get down safely. Did not agree to go as meteorite.
He said, very well, Manuel, I believe in free choice. Always. Your alternate will go.
My... who?
Comrade Wyoming. So far as I know, she is the only other person in training for the trip, other than a few Terrans. So, I went. But talk to Mike first. He said, patiently, man, my first friend, there isn't a thing to worry about. You are scheduled load KM-187, Series 76, and you'll arrive in Bombay with no trouble. But to be sure, and I reassure you, I selected that barge because it will be taken out of parking orbit and landed when India is faced toward me. And I've added an override so that I can take you away from ground control if I don't like the way they handle you. Trust me, man. It has all been thought through. Even the decision to continue shipments when security was broken was part of this plan.
Might have told me.
There was no need to worry you. Professor had to know, and I've kept in touch with him. But you are going simply to take care of him and back him up. Do his job if he dies, a factor on which I can give you no reassurance.
I sighed.
Okay, but Mike, surely you don't think you can pilot the barge into a soft landing at this distance. Speed of light alone would trip you.
Man, don't you think I understand ballistics? For the orbital position, then, from query through reply and then to command received is under 4 seconds, and you can rely on me not to waste microseconds. Your maximum parking orbit travel in 4 seconds is only 32 kilometers, diminishing asymptotically to zero at landing. My reflexive time will be effectively less than that of a pilot in a manual landing because I don't waste time grasping a situation and deciding on correct action. So my maximum is 4 seconds, but my effective reflex time is much less, as I project and predict constantly. See ahead, program it out. In effect, I'll stay 4 seconds ahead of you in your trajectory and respond instantly.
That steel can doesn't even have an altimeter.
It does now. Man, please believe me. I've thought of everything. The only reason I've ordered this extra equipment is to reassure you. Puna Ground Control hasn't made a bobble in the last 5,000 loads. For a computer, it's fairly bright.
Okay. Mike, how hard do they splash these bleeding barges? What G?
Not high, man. 10 gravities in injection, then that programs down to a steady soft 4 Gs, then you'll be nudged again between 6 and 5 Gs just before splash. The splash itself is gentle, equal to a fall of 50 meters, and you enter Ogive first with no sudden shock.
less than 3 Gs. Then you surface and splash again, lightly, and simply float at 1 G. Man, those barred shells are built as lightly as possible for economy's sake. We can't afford to toss them around, or they would split their seams.
How sweet. Mike, what would 6 to 5 Gs do to you? Split your seams?
I conjecture that I was subjected to about 6 gravities when they shipped me up here. 6 gravities in my present condition would shear many of my essential connections. However, I'm more interested in the extremely high transient accelerations I'm going to experience from shockwaves when Terra starts bombing us. Data are insufficient for prediction, but I may lose control of my outlying functions, man. This could be a major factor in any tactical situation.
Mike, you really think they're going to bomb us?
Count on it, man. That is why this trip is so important.
Left it at that, and went out to see this coffin. Should have stayed home.
Ever looked at one of those silly barges? Just a steel cylinder with retro and guidance rockets and radio transponder. Resembles a spaceship way a pair of pliers resembles my number 3 arm.
They had this one cut open and were outfitting our living quarters.
No galley, no WC, no nothing. Why bother? We were going to be in it only 50 hours. Start empty so that you won't need to honeysack in your suit.
Dispense with lounge and bar. You'll never be out of your suit. You'll be drugged and not caring.
At least Prof would be drugged almost all time. I had to be alert at landing to try to get us out of this death trap if something went wrong and nobody came along with a tin opener.
They were building a shaped cradle in which backs of our pea suits would fit. We would be strapped into these holes and stay there, clear to Terra. They seem more concerned about making total mass equal to displaced wheat and same center of gravity and all moment arms adding up correctly than they did about our comfort. Engineer in charge told me that even padding to be added inside our pea suits was figured in.
Was glad to learn we were going to have padding. The soles did not look soft.
Returned home in thoughtful condition. Lyle was not at dinner. Unusual. Greg was. More unusual.
Nobody said anything about my being scheduled to imitate a falling rock next day, although all knew. But did not realize anything special was on until all next generation left table without being told. Then knew why Greg had not gone back to Mare Undaram's site after Congress adjourned that morning. Somebody had asked for a family talk.
Mom looked around and said,
"We're all here. Ali, shut that door. That's a dear. Grandpa, will you start us?"
Our senior husband stopped nodding over coffee and firmed up. He looked down table and said strongly,
"I see that we are all here. I see that children have been put to bed. I see that there is no stranger, no guest. I say that we are met in accordance with customs created by Black Jack Davis, our first husband, and Tilly, our first wife. If there is any matter that concerns safety and happiness of our marriage, haul it out in the light now. Don't let it fester. This is our custom."
Grandpa turned to Mom and said softly, "Take it, Mimi," and slumped back into gentle apathy. But for a minute he had been strong, handsome, virile, dynamic man of days of my upbringing, and I thought with sudden tears how lucky I had been. Then didn't know whether I felt lucky or not. Only excuse I could see for a family talk-talk was fact that I was due to be shipped Earthside next day, labeled as grain. Could Mum be thinking of trying to set family against it? Nobody had to abide by results of a talk-talk, but one always did. That was strength of our marriage. When came down to issues, we stood together.
Mimi was saying, "Does anyone have anything that needs to be discussed? Speak up, dears."
Greg said,
"I have." "We listen to Greg."
Greg is a good speaker. Can stand up in front of a congregation and speak with confidence about matters I don't feel confident about even when alone. But not that he seemed anything but sure of himself. Well, we've always tried to keep this marriage in balance. Some old, some young, a regular alternation, well-spaced, just as it was handed down to us. But we varied sometimes, for good reason. He looked at Ludmilla, and adjusted it later. He looked again at far end of table, at Frank and Ali, on each side of Ludmilla. Over years, as you can see from records, average age of husbands has been about 40, wives about 35, and that age spread was just what our marriage started with. Nearly 100 years gone by, for Tilly was 15 when she opted blackjack, and he had just turned 20. Right now, I find that average age of husbands is almost exactly 40, while average... Mimi said firmly,
"Never mind the arithmetic, Greg, dear. Simply state it."
I was trying to think who Greg could possibly mean. True, I had been much away during past year, and if did get home, was often after everybody was asleep. But he was clearly talking about marriage, and nobody ever proposes another wedding in our marriage without first giving everybody a long, careful chance to look prospect over. You just don't do it any other way. So, I'm stupid. Greg stuttered and said, I propose Wyoming not. I said I was stupid. I understand machinery, and machinery understands me. But didn't claim to know anything about people. When I get to be senior husband, if live that long, I'm going to do exactly what Grandpa does with Mom. Let Sidrus run it. Just same. Well, look, why not join Greg's church? I like Greg, love Greg, and admire him. But you could never feed theology of his church through a computer and get anything but null. Wyo surely knew this, since she encountered it in adult years. Truthfully, I had suspected that Wyo's conversion was proof that she would do anything for our cause. But Wyo had recruited Greg even earlier, and had made most of trips out to New Site, easier for her to get away than me or Prof. Oh well, was taken by surprise. Should not have been. Mimi said,
"Greg, do you have reason to think that Wyo would accept an opting from us?"
"Yes."
"Very well. We all know Wyo. I'm sure we've formed our opinions of her. I see no reason to discuss it, unless someone has something to say. Speak up."
Was no surprise to Mom, but wouldn't be. Nor to anyone else either, since Mom never let a talk-talk take place unless she was sure of outcome. But wondered why Mom was sure of my opinion, so certain that she had not felt me out ahead of time, and sat there in a soggy quandary, knowing I should speak up, knowing I knew something terribly pertinent which nobody else knew, or matter would never have gone this far, something that didn't matter to me, but would matter to Mom and all our women. Sat there, miserable coward, and said nothing. Mom said,
"Very well, let's call the roll, Ludmilla."
"Me? Why, I love Wyo. Everybody knows that, sure."
"Lenore, dear?"
"Well, I may try to talk her into going back to being a brownie again. I think we set each other off, but that's her only fault, being blonder than I am."
"Da." "Sidrus?"
"Thumbs up. Wyo is our kind of people."
"Anna?"
"I've something to say before I express my opinion, Mimi."
"I don't think it's necessary, dear. Nevertheless, I'm going to haul it out in the open, just as Tilly always did according to our traditions. In this marriage, every wife has carried her load, given children to the family. It may come as a surprise to some of you to learn that Wyo has had 8 children."
Certainly surprised Ali. His head jerked and jaw dropped. I stared at plate. Oh, Wyo, Wyo. How could I let this happen? Was going to have to speak up. And realized Anna was still speaking.
So now she can have children of her own. The operation was successful, but she worries about possibility of another defective baby, unlikely as that is according to the head of the clinic in Hong Kong. So we'll just have to love her enough to make her quit fretting.
We will love her, Mom said serenely. We do love her. Anna, are you ready to express opinion?
Hardly necessary, is it? I went to Hong Kong with her, held her hand while her tubes were restored. I opt Wyo.
In this family, Mom went on, we have always felt that our husband should be allowed a veto. Odd of us, perhaps, but Tilly started it, and it has always worked well. Well, Grandpa?
Huh? What were you saying, my dear?
We are opting Wyoming, Gospodin Grandpa. Do you give consent?
What? Why, of course, of course. Very nice little girl. Say, whatever became of that pretty little afro, named something like that, she get mad at us?
Greg,
I proposed it.
Manuel, do you forbid this?
Me? Why, you know me, Mom.
I do. I sometimes wonder if you know you. Hans?
What would happen if I said no?
You'd lose some teeth, that's what, Lenore said promptly.
Hans votes yes.
Stop it, darlings,
Mom said with soft reproof.
Opting is a serious matter. Hans, speak up.
Da, yes, ja, oui, si. High time we had a pretty blonde in this. Ouch!
Stop it, Lenore. Frank?
Yes, Mom.
Ali, dear. Is it unanimous?
Lad blushed bright pink and couldn't talk. Nodded vigorously.
Instead of appointing a husband and a wife to seek out selectee and propose opting for us, Mom sent Ludmilla and Anna to fetch Wyo at once, and turned out she was only as far away as Bantan. Nor was that only irregularity. Instead of setting a date and arranging a wedding party, our children were called in, and 20 minutes later Greg had his book open, and we did be taking vows, and I finally got it through my confused head that was being done with breakneck speed because of my date to break my neck next day. Not that it could matter save as symbol of my family's love for me, since a bride spent her first night with her senior husband, and second night and third I was going to spend out in space. But it did matter anyhow, and when women started to cry during ceremony, I found self dripping tears right with them. Then I went to bed, alone, in workshop, once Wyo had kissed us and left on Grandpa's arm. Was terribly tired, and last 2 days had been hard. Thought about exercises, and decided it was too late to matter. Thought about calling Mike and asking him for news from Tara. Went to bed. Don't know how long had been asleep when realized was no longer asleep and somebody was in room.
Manuel?
Came soft whisper in dark.
Huh? Wyo? You aren't supposed to be here, dear.
I am indeed supposed to be here, my husband. Mom knows I'm here, so does Greg, and Grandpa went right to sleep.
Oh. What time is?
About 400. Please, dear, may I come to bed?
What? Oh, certainly.
Something I should remember. Oh, yes.
Mike!
Yes, man, he answered.
Switch off, don't listen. If you want me, call me on family phone.
So Wyo told me, man. Congratulations.
Then her head was pillowed on my stump, and I put right arm around her.
What are you crying about, Wyo? I'm not crying. I'm just frightened silly that you won't come back.
16.
Woke up scared silly in pitch darkness.
Manuel!
Didn't know which end was up.
Manuel!
It called again.
Wake up!
That brought me out some. Was signal, intended to trigger me. Recalled being stretched on a table in infirmary at Complex, staring up at a light and listening to a voice while a drug dripped into my veins. But was 100 years ago, endless time of nightmares, unendurable pressure, pain. Knew now what no end is up feeling was. Had experienced before, freefall, was in space. What had gone wrong? Had Mike dropped a decimal point? Or had he given in to childish nature and played a joke, not realizing it would kill? Then why, after all years of pain, was I alive? Or was I? Was this normal way for ghosts to feel? Just lonely? Lost? Nowhere? Wake up, Manuel! Wake up, Manuel!
Oh, shut up, I snarled. Button your filthy king on ace.
Recording went on. I paid no attention.
Where was that reeking light switch?
No. Doesn't take a century of pain to accelerate to Luna's escape speed at 3 gravities. Merely feels so. 82 seconds. But it's one time when human nervous system feels every microsecond. 3 Gs is 18 grim times as much as a loony ought to weigh. Then discovered those vacuum skulls had not put arm back on. For some silly reason they had taken it off when they stripped me to prepare me, and I was loaded with enough don't worry and let's sleep pills not to protest. No haha had they put it on again, but that Dreklik switch was on my left and sleeve of peasuit was empty. Spent next 10 years getting unstrapped with one hand, then a 20-year sentence floating around in dark before managed to find my cradle again, figured out which was head end, and from that hint locate switch by touch. That compartment was not over 2 meters in any dimension. This turns out to be larger than old dome in freefall and total darkness. Found it. We had light. And don't ask why that coffin did not have at least 3 lighting systems all working all time. Habit, probably. A lighting system implies a switch to control it, n'yet? Thing was built in 2 days. Should be thankful switch worked. Once I had light, cubic shrank to true claustrophobic dimensions, and 10% smaller. And I took a look at Prof. Dead, apparently. Well, he had every excuse. Envied him, but was now supposed to check his pulse and breathing, and such like, in case he had been unlucky and still had such troubles. And was again hampered, and not just by being one-armed. Grain load had been dried and depressured as usual before loading, but that cell was supposed to be pressured. Oh, nothing fancy, just a tank with air in it. Our P-suits were supposed to handle needs such as life's breath for those 2 days. But even best P-suit is more comfortable in pressure than in vacuum, and anyhow, I was supposed to be able to get at my patient. Could not. Did not need to open helmet to know this steel can had not stayed gas tight. Knew at once, naturally, from where P-suit felt. Oh, drugs I had for proof, heart stimulants and so forth, were in field ampules. Could jab them through his suit. But how to check heart and breathing? His suit was cheapest sort. Sold for loony who rarely leaves Warren. Had no readouts. His mouth hung open and eyes stared. A debtor, I decided. No need to ex-proof beyond that old lineman. Had eliminated himself. Tried to see pulse on throat. His helmet was in way. They had provided a program clock, which was mighty kind of them. Showed I had been out 44+ hours, all to plan. And in 3 hours, we should receive horrible booting to place us in parking orbit around Terra. Then, after 2 circums, call it 3 more hours, we should start injection into landing program. If Puna Ground Control didn't change its feeble mind and leave us in orbit. Remind itself that was unlikely. Grain is not left in vacuum longer than necessary. Has tendency to become puffed wheat or popped corn, which not only lowers value but can split those thin canisters like a melon. Wouldn't that be sweet? Why had they packed us in with grain? Why not just a load of rock that doesn't mind vacuum? Had time to think about that and to become very thirsty. Took nipple for 1/2 a mouthful, no more, because certainly did not want to take 6 Gs with a full bladder. Need not have worried, was equipped with catheter, but did not know.
When time got short, I decided it couldn't hurt Prof to give him a jolt of drug that was supposed to take him through heavy acceleration. Then, after in parking orbit, give him heart stimulant. Since didn't seem as if anything could hurt him. Gave him first drug, then spent the rest of minutes struggling back into straps, one-handed. Was sorry I didn't know name of my helpful friend. Could have cursed him better. 10 G's get you into parking orbit around Terra in a mere 3.26 × 10⁷ microseconds. Merely seems longer. 10 gravities, being 60 times what a fragile sack of protoplasm should be asked to endure. Call it 33 seconds. My truthful word? I suspect my ancestress in Salem spent a worse half-minute day they made her dance. Gave Prof heart stimulant. Then spent 3 hours trying to decide whether to drug self as well as Prof for landing sequence. Decided against. All drug had done for me at catapulting had been to swap a minute and a half of misery and 2 days of boredom for a century of terrible dreams. And besides, if those last minutes were going to be my very last, I decided to experience them. Bad as they would be, they were my very own, and I would not give them up. They were bad. 6 G's did not feel better than 10. Felt worse. 4 G's, no relief. Then we were kicked harder. Then suddenly, just for seconds, in free fall again. Then came splash, which was not gentle, and which we took on straps, not pads, as we went in head first. Also, don't think Mac realized that after diving in hard, we would then surface and splash hard again before we damped down into floating. Earthworms call it floating, but it's nothing like floating in freefall. You do it at 1G, 6 times what is decent, and odd side motions tacked on. Very odd motions. Mac had assured us that solar weather was good, no radiation danger inside that Iron Maiden. But he had not been so interested in Earthside Indian Ocean weather. Prediction was acceptable for landing barges, and suppose he felt that was good enough. And I would have thought so too. Stomach was supposed to be empty, but I filled helmet with sourest, nastiest fluid you would ever go a long way to avoid. Then we turned completely over, and I got it in hair and eyes and some in nose. This is thing earthworms call seasickness, and is one of many horrors they take for granted. Won't go into long period during which we were towed into port. Let it stand that, in addition to seasickness, my air bottles were playing out. They were rated for 12 hours, plenty for 50-hour orbit, most of which I was unconscious, and none involving heavy exercise, but not quite enough with some hours of towing added. By time barge finally held still, I was almost too dopey to care about trying to break out. Except for one fact. We were picked up, I think, and tumbled a bit. Then brought to rest with me upside down. This is a no-good position at best under one gravity. Simply impossible when supposed to A. unstrap self, B. get out of suit-shaped cavity, C. get loose a sledgehammer fastened with butterfly nuts to bulkhead, D. smash same against breakaways guarding escape hatch, E. batter way out, and F. finally, drag an old man in a pea suit out after you. Didn't finish step A. Passed out, head downwards. Lucky this was emergency last resort routine. Stu Lejoie had been notified before we left. New services had been warned shortly before we landed. I woke up with people leaning over me. Passed out again. Woke up second time in hospital bed. Flat on back with heavy feeling in chest. Was heavy and weak all over. But not ill. Just tired. Bruised. Hungry. Thirsty. Languid. Was a transparent plastic tent over bed, which accounted for fact I was having no trouble breathing. I at once was closed in on from both sides. A tiny Hindu nurse with big eyes on one side. Steward Lejoie, another. He grinned at me.
Hi, Kaber. How do you feel?
I'm right. But oh, bloody. What a way to travel.
Prof says it's the only way. What a tough old boy he is.
Hold it. Prof said, Prof is dead.
Not at all. Not in good shape. We've got him in a pneumatic bed with a round-the-clock watch and more instruments wired into him than you would believe. But he is alive and will be able to do his job. But truly, he didn't mind the trip. He never knew about it, so he says. Went to sleep in one hospital, woke up in another. I thought he was wrong when he refused to let me wangle it to send the ship, but he was not. The publicity has been tremendous. I said slowly, "You say Proof refused to let you send the ship?" "I should say, Chairman Céline refused. Didn't you see the dispatches, Manny?" "No. Too late to fight over it. But last few days have been busy." "A dinkum word. Here, too. Don't recall when I last dosed."
"You sound like a loony."
"I am a loony, Manny. Don't ever doubt it."
But the sister is looking daggers at me."
Stu picked her up, turned her around. I decided he wasn't all loony yet, but Nurse didn't resent.
"Go play somewhere else, dear. I'll give your patient back to you, still warm, in a few minutes."
He shut the door on her and came back to bed.
But Adam was right. This was not only wonderful publicity, but safer.
"Publicity, I suppose. But safer? Let's not talk about it."
"Safer, my old. You weren't shot at. Yet they had 2 hours in which they knew right where you were, a big fat target. They couldn't make up their minds what to do. They haven't formed the policy yet. They didn't even dare not bring you down on schedule. The news was full of it. I had stories slanted and waiting. Now they don't dare touch you. You're popular heroes. Whereas, if I had waited to charter a ship and fetch you, well, I don't know. We probably would have been ordered into parking orbit. Then you two, and myself perhaps, would have been taken off under arrest. No skipper is going to risk missiles no matter how much is paid. The proof of the pudding, Cobber. But let me brief you. You're both citizens of the People's Directorate of Chad. Best I could do on short notice. Also, Chad has recognized Luna. I had to buy one prime minister, 2 generals, some tribal chiefs, and a minister of finance. Cheap for such a hurry-up job. I haven't been able to get you diplomatic immunity, but I hope to. Before you leave hospital. At present, they haven't even dared arrest you. They can't figure out what you've done. They have guards outside, but simply for your protection. And a good thing, or you would have reporters 9 deep shoving microphones into your face.
Just what have we done? That they know about, I mean. Illegal immigration?
Not even that, Manny. You never were a consignee, and you have a derivative Pan-African citizenship through one of your grandfathers. No, ha-ha. In Professor De La Paz's case, we dug up proof that he had been granted naturalized Chad citizenship 40 years back, waited for the ink to dry, and used it. You're not even illegally entering here in India. Not only did they bring you down themselves, knowing that you were in that barge, but also a control officer very kindly and fairly cheaply stamped your virgin passports. In addition to that, Prof's exile has no legal existence as the government that prescribed him no longer exists. And a competent court has taken notice. That was more expensive.
Nurse came back in, indignant as a mother cat.
Lord Stuart, you must let my patient rest.
At once, mon cherie.
Your Lord Stuart?
Should be Comte. Or I can lay a dubious claim to being the MacGregor. The blue blood bit helps. These people haven't been happy since they took their royalty away from them.
As he left, he patted her rump. Instead of screaming, she wiggled it. Was smiling as she came over to me. Stu was going to have to watch that stuff when he went back to Luna. If did. She asked how I felt.
Told her I was right, just hungry.
Sister, did you see some prosthetic arms in our luggage?
She had, and I felt better with number 6 in place. I had selected it, and number 2, and social arm, as enough for trip. Number 2 was presumably still in complex. I hoped somebody was taking care of it.
but number 6 is most all-around useful arm. With it and Social 1, I'd be okay. 2 days later, we left for Agra to present credentials to Federated Nations. I was in bad shape, and not just high G. Could do well enough in a wheelchair and could even walk a little, although did not in public. What I had was a sore throat that missed pneumonia only through drugs. Traveler's trots, skin disease on hands and spreading to feet. Just like my other trips to that diseased-ridden hole, Terra. We Lunas don't know how lucky we are, living in a place that has tightest of quarantines, almost no vermin, and what we have controlled by vacuum anytime necessary. Or unlucky, since we have almost no immunities if turns out we need them. Still, wouldn't swap. Never heard word venereal until first went earthside and had thought common cold was state of ice miner's feet. And wasn't cheerful for other reason. Stu had fetched us a message from Adam Celine. Buried in it, concealed even from Stu, was news that chances had dropped to worse than 1 in 100. Wondered what point in risking crazy trip if made odds worse. Did Mike really know what chances were? Couldn't see any way he could compute them, no matter how many facts he had. But Prof didn't seem worried. He talked to platoons of reporters, smiled at endless pictures, gave out statements, telling world he placed great confidence in Federated Nations and was sure our just claims would be recognized, and that he wanted to thank friends of Free Luna for wonderful help in bringing true story of our small but sturdy nation before good people of Terra. F of FL being Stu, a professional public opinion firm, several thousand chronic petition signers, and a great stack of Hong Kong dollars.
This book is continued on Disc 8.